their reputation by which they continue to exist. In other words, one should try to achieve a good reputation instead of anything else. Purport Mishra Prabhupada. In this regard, Chanaka Pandit also says, Ayushah kshana ekopi na labhya svarnakoti bihi. The duration of one's life is extremely short, but if in that short lifetime one can do something that enhances his good reputation, that may continue to exist for many millions of years. Bali Maharaj therefore decided not to follow his spiritual master's instruction that he deny his promise to Vamanadeva. Instead, he decided to give the land according to the promise and be everlastingly celebrated as one of the 12 Mahajans. With the translation again, O best of the Brahmanas, certainly the great demoniac kings, who were never reluctant to fight, enjoyed this world, but in due course of time, everything they had was taken away, except their reputation by which they continue to exist. In other words, one should try to achieve a good reputation instead of anything else. So the topic of today's verse is fame, yasha, one of Krishna's opulences. Here translated by Prabhupada is reputation. So he's in the last verse he quoted Chanaka Pandit, and this purport he's also quoting Chanaka Pandit. So we can see what now in the text he's kind of making reference to two of Chanakya's slokas. The Sanskrit he gives is something Prabhupada quotes a lot, that even with millions of dollars, you know, so much gold, you cannot buy back a moment. So this is setting up the value of that moment. Okay, so putting the pressure on the actor. Okay, you have this moment, it's so valuable, what are you going to do with it? And then the English that Prabhupada then gives is actually the English for a different shloka, where he's saying the duration of one's lifetime is extremely short, but if in that short lifetime one can do something that enhances his good reputation, that may continue to exist for many millions of years. So that is yeah, you know? The Sanskrit for that? Yeah. So, he quotes, right? So many times Prabhupada likes that one. Chanaka Pandit has a few ones like along those lines. He has another one, starts with the Muhurtam Api, Jivechanera, Shuvalena, Karmana, Na Kalpam Api, Kastena Loka Dhyayavirudhina. So that's a momentary existence involved in highly noble work is many times better than survival for ages, but before working against the welfare of the two worlds, it is better to die. So Prabhupada also quotes that one, this idea of that a moment in full consciousness is so much more valuable. Another of Chanaka's slokas, he's saying the mean aspire only for wealth. Adama, ichita only dhanam. So they're looking for dhanam. The mediocre yearn for wealth and honor both. The madhyama, their ichita is for dhanam and manam. So reputation and wealth. But the noble care only for honor. The uttama, their ichita is only for mano. And he concludes, mano hi mahatang dhanam. Only honor is the real treasure of a great man. So this is a theme in Chanaka Pandit shlokas. Now in this case, we're not talking about any kind of honor. It's specifically the kind of reputation or honor we get from not fleeing the battlefield. A Kshatriya brand of honor. Shesha Prabhu brought up this verse yesterday, talking about how the Kshatriyas and the Brahmanas, Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, 18th chapter, he's talking about not so much what they're doing, but their qualities. Huh? The other two varnas, he talks about their more their karma, or their, and then for these two, he's talking more about their guna. So with the kshatriyas, he says, Shaudyam tejo dhutir dakshang yuddhi chapya palayanam dhanam ishvara bhavascha kshatran karmas bhavajam. Heroism, power, determination, resourcefulness, courage in battle, generosity and leadership are the natural qualities of work for the kshatriyas. So this courage in battle that Prabhupada translates here, this word, apalayanam, so not palayanam, we'll have a story in a second where we'll see that word, the opposite of that, someone doing palayanam, fleeing. So literally it's not fleeing from the battlefield. And this is also the sense of Krishna's arguments to Arjuna, one of the, his lines of arguments of why Arjuna should not fight. In the second chapter, he starts in 31, considering your specific duty as a kshatriya, you should know that there is no better engagement for you than fighting on religious principles, and so there is no need for hesitation. O Partha, happier the kshatriyas to whom such fighting opportunities come unsought, opening for them the doors of the heavenly planets. If, however, you do not perform your religious duty of fighting, then you will certainly incur sins for neglecting your duties and thus lose your reputation as a fighter. People will always speak of your infamy, and for a respectable person, dishonor is worse than death. The great generals who have highly esteemed your name and fame will think that you have left the battlefield out of fear only, and thus they will consider you insignificant. Your enemies will describe you in many unkind words and scorn your ability. What could be more painful for you? O son of Kunti, either you will be killed on the battlefield and attain the heavenly planets, or you will conquer and enjoy the earthly kingdom. Therefore, get up with determination and fight. So he's using this exact line of argument. He's so Krishna seems to also think that this is a valid goal to strive for, a valid thing to preserve, particularly in the context of a kshatriya. He's saying, yeah, you'll lose your reputation. They'll think you're a coward, and this is worse than death. What could be more painful for you? He's using this as reason to provoke Arjuna to fight. We also see this quality is with you actually see actually in many ways I've never been, but everything I hear of the Japanese civilization sounds very kshatriya-ish. You mean you have the samurai who have this code also, right? There's no question of coming back from the battle. Either you die or you're victorious. One or the other. There's no question of fleeing. That would be completely dishonorable, and without your honor, what is the point of living? So very much that sense. And so we see that. And in this verse today, specifically Bali Maharaj, he's saying some great demoniac kings, they were never reluctant to fight, and they enjoyed the world, but eventually everything was taken except their reputation. So he's saying Daitya Indra. Now he's of course only a few generations since Diti, and then Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, Prahlad, Virochan, and then Bali. So in all likelihood he's probably referring to Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu. But I thought this theme is there elsewhere in the Bhagavatam of demoniac kings showing this quality, this kshatriya quality of heroism. And knowing that at least their reputation will be preserved. One of them is Vritrasura, who is of course involved, you know, the demigods and demons are fighting, and Indra kills the priest of the demigods because he was giving oblations on the side to the demons, and so in retaliation, this great demon is created from a sacrifice, Vritrasura, just to kill Indra. Bhagavan describes he looks like a burnt hill, very dark complexion, melted copper, the color of his mustache and beard and bodily hairs, and when the demons and demigods were fighting, he opened his mouth and just swallowed all the weapons. And so this is a little bit relating again with yesterday Shesha Prabhu was telling the story of Didichi Muni. And so this is the occasion that prompts that, is the demigods are very discouraged by this, and so then they approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they ask for some help, and then this is when they recommended, okay, get this from Didichi Muni, get this, make this thunderbolt. Indra makes his famous thunderbolt. So then they come back, and then they're very enthused, and they engage with the demons again. Bali Maharaj is there on the other side, and it said, then they were throwing their weapons on the devas, but they had no effect. Bhagavatam says it was like the false accusations an insignificant person hurls against a saintly person. It just doesn't affect them, doesn't bother them. And so then the demons were getting very afraid, and actually says, I was hoping it would be the same word, and it is. This in Bhagavad Gita, the quality of the kshatriya, the word Krishna uses, apalayanam, so not fleeing. And here it says the demons are palayitam, they're fleeing. So they're doing exactly the opposite. So Vritrasura, as an embodiment, even though he's born in this asuric family, he has that mood, and he understands dharma, because of course he's actually a devotee who's taken birth in this body. Chitraketu Maharaj. And so he starts to condemn them, and he starts to use the same kind of argument Krishna was using with Arjuna, that you're going to have to die anyways. Death has come. So either win the battle and enjoy the kingdom here, or die and get the heavenly planets and preserve your reputation. He says, you all are acting like cowards. This is not befitting. Although you have come from your mothers, you have come just like stool. So he's saying they're worthless. Absolutely. I mean, this is what Krishna was saying with Arjuna, right? That they'll just think of you in harsh words. They'll totally dismiss you. So this is completely unacceptable behavior for a warrior. Completely unacceptable. So we're going to explore that in a second. Why is that completely unacceptable? So Indra comes back. He hurls his club at Vritrasura. Vritrasura catches it in his left hand, hurls it back. It smacks Airavata's head, Indra's elephant. Then Vritra, he keeps having to encourage Indra, teach him about kshatriya duty. Don't get discouraged, it's your duty. He's giving him also Bhagavad Gita advice. And then Vritrasura hurls his trident, and then Indra, he uses his thunderbolt, cuts this and cuts one of the arms of Vritrasura. So now he doesn't have an arm. But Vritrasura keeps fighting. The kshatriya, he's just, you know, it's either win or die. So he keeps fighting, and actually Indra drops his thunderbolt, and actually he's completely embarrassed by this and a little paralyzed, and he's kind of sitting there for a little bit looking at it. Vritrasura again has to kind of preach to him kshatriya dharma, Bhagavad Gita. And then finally, Indra picks it up, Vritrasura hurls his iron club, Indra cuts that with his thunderbolt and cuts Vritrasura's other arm. So now Vritrasura says, looks like a mountain whose two wings have been cut off. Indra does that also with his thunderbolt. Then he just kind of goes on the ground and opens his mouth real big and just tries to swallow everyone. So he swallows Indra, and Indra escapes by using the thunderbolt. So Vritrasura, a very good example of this quality, of this kshatriya quality we're talking about. Courage in battle, not fleeing from battle. His arms are cut off, doesn't matter. What can he use? Okay, now he's going to use his mouth. Another example is Jarasandha. Definitely a demoniac type king. And he's described, he's a dutiful householder, great respect for the brahmanas, a great fighter, and never neglectful of Vedic injunctions. And it's interesting, and so when he comes, basically, the idea is that Krishna and Arjuna and Bhim, they kind of go disguised as brahmanas to take advantage of this quality of Jarasandhas. And then so they come asking for some charity. And and actually, Krishna, he's in trying to convince Jarasandha to go along with it. We heard yesterday also about Maharaj Shibi. So basically, Krishna is kind of using this argument. He's saying, actually, your reputation for being charitable. Your Majesty must have heard the glorious names of charitable personalities such as Harishchandra, Rantideva, and Mudgala, and the great Maharaj Shibi. And so he's saying, these great personalities have attained immortal fame simply by sacrificing this temporary and perishable body. Again, this theme that ready to surrender the body, which is connected with having the courage to not flee in battle. So he tries to convince him based on these grounds. And then Jarasandha, he actually looks and he's like, okay, they've come as brahmanas, but he's kind of looking, he's like, gosh, there's some kind of scars on their shoulders. It looks like where you would hang a bow, and they look a little buffed out for brahmanas, right? So he's a little bit not convinced. It's like, and then they speak so grave and commanding. And so he's thinking, actually, they're kshatriyas, but they've come as brahmanas. And so actually, he thinks, oh, under the circumstances, I'm prepared to give them anything. Even if they ask for my body, I shall not hesitate to offer it to them. In this regard, he began to think of Bali Maharaj. Lord Vishnu, in the dress of a Brahmin, appeared as a beggar before Bali, and in that way he snatched away all of his opulence and kingdom. He did this for the benefit of Indra, who, having been defeated by Bali Maharaj, was bereft of his kingdom. And so he follows the logic, and he says, actually, Bali Maharaj was the same situation. He could see it was a trick. It's the Supreme Lord who's come as a Brahmana. But he's saying, oh, Bali did not hesitate to give in charity whatever the Brahmana wanted. And at last he gave up everything, and he's saying, it is my strong determination that if I can achieve immortal reputation by sacrificing this perishable body, I must act for that purpose. The life of a kshatriya who does not live for the benefit of the brahmana is certainly condemned. So he actually agrees. And not only agrees, but because he has this, he understands this dharma of the kshatriya, he doesn't say, okay, I'll fight whoever is the one I think I can win. He's actually so into this sense of, no, I want an equal battle. Krishna, he's a coward. I attack his city, and he just, what does Prabhupada say? You become very confused when you face me in fighting, Jarasandha says this to Krishna. So he dismisses. Okay, forget it. I'm not going to fight Krishna. Arjuna, he's junior to me. Actually, he's not, does not match my strength. And so he chooses Bhim, specifically. And so he doesn't shy away. He doesn't shy away from the challenge. So, embodying again this sense, this readiness to die and not shying away from a challenge, not worried about preserving himself. So he engages in this fight. So the question is, why? Why is this part of the Kshatriya Dharma? Because there was a discussion I was having with some friends. We'd gathered, and we were talking a little bit about Mahabharata. And, Yudhishthira lost this gambling match based on the same principle, right? He couldn't refuse the challenge. He's a kshatriya, cannot refuse the challenge. And so then Duryodhana, he's thinking, actually, you know, even if they get their kingdom back, I'll just challenge them again. My uncle Shakuni will win the dice match. I'll exile them again. This can go on until, you know, I'm dead till they're dead, right? And so it seems like kind of a farce. I mean, you can see even all these stories are people taking advantage of this dharma. So the Bali Maharaj, right? Even though he sees that, of course, he's doing this as the Supreme Lord, but it's also to follow the dharma. Jarasandha knows, oh, actually, they're not even brahmanas; they've come here, they're kshatriyas, but still, I'm going to do it. So it seems like, it become almost tragically comical, right? And actually, it happens in the Mahabharata, right? Yudhishthira does lose everything, but because Draupadi appeals to Dhritarashtra, he returns everything, and again he challenges. So Yudhishthira, he's not a fool. He knows same thing will happen, the cheating will happen, but he agrees. So this seems like a silly regulation. What is this? We're handicapping the kshatriyas. Any challenge, gambling, fighting they have to take? Anybody comes? Why? What is the benefit? They should be able to exercise their discrimination. Yudhishthira should be able to say, you're going to cheat. It's not even Duryodhana playing. You took away everything last time. No, that's okay. I'm going to pass. Someone's challenged a fight. Okay, I'll pass. One of the reasons why you can't have this, why the kshatriyas have to do this, is The Kshatriya is charged with protecting the people. I went to IMAX theater once, you know, giant screen, and they usually show some kind of nature thing or whatever, so you take advantage of the giant screen. So it was the lions of Africa. And so you're just following one kind of lion, right, king of the animals, and it sort of showed his progression in life when he kind of took over the pride, you know, defeated the older male, and then he just became the dominant male. Had his females and his children and the whole kind of the range. He was the dominant lion. And then so sometimes some young lions will come, you know, they'll come on the perimeter and kind of roar, you know, rah, rah, right? And they call, they summon for a fight, and he defeats them, you know? Young whippersnappers, cuffs them on the ear, and they go. But eventually, right, towards the end of the movie, a lion comes, and actually this lion, the main lion, he's getting a little old, you know? And he comes, and he fights, he puts in a good fight, but actually, he can't make it. No killing, but it gets to the point where it's clear who's going to win. And then the one that's, you know, going to be defeated, he just recognizes it. So he leaves. He has to yield the kingdom. So it's a little bit like this in the sense that the Kshatriya is charged with protecting the subjects. So if he's feeble, if he's not able to do this, then the whole safety of the kingdom and the subjects and law and order is compromised. So one reason is this ensures that there's actually a capable Kshatriya who will be able to protect. And if he's not able to, it's better probably the person who is challenging take over, because at least that person will, that new warrior will have that strength. So this is one of the reasons. I think a deeper reason is that Dharma has to be played out. And actually to kind of back this reason up, we'll go back to Vritrasura in his, when he's encouraging the demons to fight and chastising the demigods. And so actually when the demons started to run away, the demigods started to attack him from the back, which was also not Kshatriya Dharma. So he was chastising both. Demons, you're a fool for running, worthless. And demigods, you are also worthless. You're attacking people running away from you. What kind of courage is this? So he says, "O insignificant demigods, if you truly have faith in your heroism, if you have patience in the cores of your hearts, and if you are not ambitious for sense gratification, please stand before me for a moment." Kshatriyas, for various reasons, live in great opulence. And so one of the reasons they should be ready to fight is it keeps them unattached to this opulence. Huh? He's saying here, if you are not ambitious for sense gratification, this could become a reason to not fight. Oh, I'm going to lose all my kingdom, all my queens, all my elephants, all my palaces, all my wealth. So this is not acceptable. There is no room for fear or attachment. For reasons of keeping the kingdom, I mean the Kshatriya, because he's the ruler, he has to have. For the common man who's not on the transcendental platform, just to respect, you respect somebody that has something more than you. So if the king is living in a house the same size as you, you'll think, why should I listen to this guy, right? Or you have a bigger house. So if he has to have the biggest house, he has to have the most wealth, then on this materialistic sense, you understand, okay, this is someone who excels me, I will listen to them. I will listen to them. So Kshatriya has to have all this opulence, but he cannot be attached. He cannot be attached. And so there's no room for this, oh, I might lose all this luxury and wealth, and so I won't fight. There's no room for this. There's no room for this. There's no room for fear in the Kshatriya. And the real crucial reason for this is that the Raja Rishis, right? This also Shesha Prabhu quoted yesterday. The Kshatriyas, they're the ones getting Bhagavad Gita. The verse isn't Imam Brahma Rishayo Vidu. Evam Parampara Pratam. It's not the Brahma Rishis, the Raja Rishis. Why? Because as Rindra Shri Prabhu, he points out, sometimes We think, okay, the brahmanas are a mode of goodness, kshatriyas are a mode of passion, vaishyas are passion and ignorance, and shudras are ignorance. But less often, but somewhere Prabhupada talks about the kshatriya is actually goodness and passion. And Vrindasrupa, where he prefers this, it balances it out more. You sort of pure goodness, pure ignorance, and then kind of mixtures. So they know all the dharma a brahmana knows, but they put it into action. So they're dharma in action. They're like active brahmanas, practically. And so that's why they're getting Bhagavad Gita, because this is not wisdom to discuss in the Gurukul and just philosophize or have some debate among the munis. No, this is practical knowledge. This is dharma to put into action. So that's why Krishna gives it to the Raja Rishis. And so they have to play out dharma. And so if a king gets challenged, he's not thinking, oh, can I win? What will I lose? No, he's ready to put himself out there. And he knows that if dharma is with him, he will overcome. And dharma is preserved. And if it's not with him, he'll lose, but that's probably good anyways. Because just for fighting, doing his duty, he'll get the heavenly planets. And then this more, obviously more righteous king. So the point is, in the West, we get a little bit carried away with free will. It's definitely there, but we take it to the maximum. This is the Western tradition. And the West looks at the East or Indian philosophy as the opposite. It's totally fatalistic or something. Now the truth, the Vedic truth, is actually in between, but it's a balance of the two. So the point is the properly trained Kshatriya, Raja Rishi, he will not flee from a battle or a challenge because he knows that as long as he acts according to Dharma and accepts that, it will allow Dharma to work itself out. So we could say, Yudhishthira, oh, in theory, he could have been losing his kingdom repeatedly, but did that happen? No. It didn't happen. It wasn't going to happen. It was not meant to happen. By his accepting the challenge, rather, the Pandavas all went to the forest. They enjoyed very sattvic environment. They were able to build their strength. Arjuna got all sorts of heavenly weapons, divine weapons. They formed alliances, had various children of different races that came and assisted in the battle. So it actually worked for the best. So the Kshatriya knows that whatever the challenge, I will step up, and he's ready even if I will totally lose. He knows that is what is necessary to allow Dharma to work out. Because he knows it's not just my free will and us figuring it out. He just knows it's my duty to do that, and that is what will allow Dharma to be established and the old to be refreshed by the new and the divine plan to work out. So this is what I would propose is the most important reason for the Kshatriyas having this duty, and that being a critical part of their Dharma to never back away from a challenge. And this is what Bali Maharaj is praising his ancestors, that even they lost, but they were not afraid to fight in battle. They lost everything, so at least they had their reputation. And again, Krishna is using this argument with Arjuna. So the idea is that either they will win and maintain things, or they'll lose and some other plan of Dharma will work out as far as the kingdom, and for them they'll achieve heavenly planets. So, so he's praising this. And he's using it as a basis. So even if I'm losing my whole kingdom by doing this, I'm following Kshatriya Dharma, I'm ready to give to the brahmanas, and I will gain an immortal reputation. So I'll stop there. If there's any questions, I'll put on my glasses so I can see who's raising their hand. Is that Madan Mohan Prabhu? I can't see. Okay.
Could you explain a little bit about what's the value of having a reputation after you're already dead?
That's why it always is brought in that actually you gain the heavenly planets. Jarasandha uses this, Krishna uses this. So the jiva himself will go to the heavenly planets, get a benefit. And then the reputation, it's more for the descendants and for the kshatriyas who follow, that they will also be inspired to follow the Dharma. They say, just like these Indriya kings, they lost everything, but they still fought. So he's inspired to do that. So technically, they're not enjoying the reputation. They'll enjoy a heavenly planet, like a reward for doing their Dharma. But it's really to set that example. It's really setting the example. And so that family line, it becomes another motivation for the Kshatriyas to not let down this tradition. Is that okay?
But it says he also lives in his reputation. So how's he alive? If his reputation is there, how's he still alive? That body was all...
Yeah, the body's gone. The soul is somewhere else.
But it says he lives in it. He continues to live through his reputation. Mm-hmm. So what's that mean?
Partly also is we see in Mahabharata there's actually that the kings are like actually actively in the heavenly planets when their descendants are still in the earthly planet. And so there's some, in fact this becomes the motivation, one of the motivations for the Rajasuya Yajna. How to promote, he's not in the highest kind of a planet, he doesn't have the grandest house, so Yudhishthira becomes motivated. So in Vedic culture, that's part of it. And then, of course, they're living through their progeny. To their progeny, this is also... I don't know if someone has thoughts of that or other questions. But does someone have something related to this point? Maybe we can do that first. Yeah, Ganagami, please.
The reputation of someone, once it's remembered after his death, that is actually a pious credit for him. So he continues into the heavenly planets. He gets that result.
Okay.
Whereas if he's done impious activities and people think disparagingly of him,
it takes away.
Creed.
Oh, wow. Okay.
One point you made was very nice about the Kshatriya seeing a larger pattern beyond just himself and his what's in it for me. He sees a larger pattern of the Dharma that's unfolding, and he's willing to play a part in that. Because actually, there's a humble situation there. It's very nice.
Right.
Thank you.
Right. No, thank you. That's important. Yeah, it's like some humility there. Kripa Sindhu Prabhu?
I was going to say something fairly similar, but that the whatever qualities we have go on into our next body. So if one becomes a coward, so he's not going to lose that automatically.
Right.
Or if one becomes a hero, he also would not lose that. He'll have it in his next birth. Even if he goes to the spiritual world, he'll have that quality.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, right? In the material world, we're keeping the same subtle body. And so, yeah, that's true. By doing some proper action, it's creating that nice impression. So in a way, it continues. Mother Nataka?
Yes, in the Kshatriya spirit, the person lives on through their reputation, and their children and their children's children benefit from their ancestors' good reputation. But Srila Prabhupada gave a really pertinent and marvelous example of this in a class, in a lecture. And this also exhibits how it's ingrained in the Kshatriyas, even in the queens, in the lady, in the Kshatriya ladies, that this example of what you're speaking of. So what happened was there was a king and he had gone to battle, but he lost. So when he came back, his wife told the guards not to let him in. So when he came to the door, she said, "Who is there?" They said, "The king is here." And she said, "The king? This cannot be the king. My king, either he will win or he will give up his life on the battlefield. So this cannot be my king. This must be an imposter." And she wouldn't let him in.
Right. No, nice story. Thank you. Yeah, it's because they may learn from the guru later, but if the mother doesn't have these qualities, where the Kshatriyas will get it? They're going to remember it, Mama didn't raise no coward. That's what they're going to fall back on, right? They're going to remember what the Kshatriya mother instilled in them. Yeah, this is what it means to be. Mother Ruchir?
I was just wondering, why do they need Brahmanas? They're already so highly advanced. Why do they need the Brahmanas?
It's a little bit like... we talk about Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, they're dominating these modes. It's not like they're under them, but there's a tendency to be influenced, and so that's what to speak of for them. So the Kshatriya, because they have the knowledge, but because they really get into it, so then they're not always able to remember everything and to keep it clear in mind, because they get into the action. And so the brahmanas are there to almost remind them. It's not things that kshatriyas don't know, but the brahmanas are sitting aloof, so they're able to stay very fixed in the mode of goodness, whereas the kshatriyas, because they're so active, they tend to get in the mode of passion, so then sometimes they might get a little carried away or a little off path. And so the brahmanas are there to kind of guide them, remind them, you know, by the way, do you remember? And then, you know, if they're saintly, then they'll follow. And if they're not, then they've kind of gone too far off track and they need to be removed. Adikachapu?
Just a small point. Vritchasura, he was in a different category. He wasn't really like a kshatriya. He wanted to die because he knew that when he was killed, he would go back to Godhead. So he didn't really fight to win. He fought because he wanted to die, mm-hmm. because he knew, you know, he was a devotee, and this was the last of his material existence, right. So he was just trying to go back to Godhead.
Thank you. Mother Mother Mati.
I was appreciating your point you made that how by following the Dharma, that everything plays out, you know, if you follow. And then I was thinking about in the Mahabharata that actually all the Pandavas, they followed the Dharma. And because they did, it seems like it played out, because everything Krishna did, he actually broke all the rules. And because Krishna broke the rules, they won. But it's because they followed the rules. And because they followed the rules, Krishna played his way, and he broke the rules to have them win.
That's a nice point, yeah. Right, so yeah, if we're very keen on because they're Krishna's rules, doing it to please him, then if there is something that needs to be done, he'll take care of it. Right? He'll take care of it. Divyanga Prabhu?
Nice class, Prabhu. Krishna says infamy is worse than death, so this fame thing, you know, if you have a good reputation, I have a little experience of this, how you're, it kind of follows you around. If you have some reputation that isn't nice, then you'll show up somewhere and they go, oh yeah, Div, we heard, and they'll tell you, did you really? Wow, what was going on? So this is a powerful thing that follows you, whether it's, you know, one way or the other. And I also wanted, I just couldn't stop thinking this, sarva dharma prityajya. It's like Krishna says dharma shmarma, doesn't he, pretty much? It's just a thought I had.
Yeah, he does. That is his highest instruction. Maybe last point, Ganagamya, and then I think we should probably finish.
You brought up the thing about kshatriyas living in opulence and so forth, and I was just a comment on that. I was in Thailand, and there was a king there about in the 1800s, and he had about 100 sons. He was the one that was this Anna and the King of Siam was based on. But what he did was he had that woman come and educate the sons. They all learned English. And then he sent them all over the world to different places and come back to report to him on what was going on in these different countries, how they were governed and so forth, in order to try to understand, you know, how to govern nicely. He was so popular and so, you know, strong a king, and he actually eliminated slavery. They had conversation with Abraham Lincoln or something by post. And he developed a system to eliminate slavery, which was very, you know, widespread in that country, by just stating that the children of the slaves would no longer be slaves. And so within a generation, it was finished, practically speaking. Within 50 years, it was gone. So like this, the kshatriya, I mean, the point I want to make is the kshatriya had like many wives to have 100 sons and so forth. But this is opulence was there because when you have a really wise ruler, you know, he's given the opportunity to do this. Of course, in this age, we don't see anyone of very much quality to do that.
Yeah. Dearth of kshatriyas, for sure. All right, thank you very much for your questions. Hare Krishna. All glory to Srimad Bhagavatam, all glory to Srila Prabhupada. Yeah, I should probably get a little bit back to the books.